Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for January 15th, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you to talk the big shows in pro wrestling as we do each and every week, each and every Sunday night. You can contact us and get in on the conversation by emailing us at wnialivecast@gmail.com, or you can call us up, 515-605-9345. We have a few people on hold, and we'll get to those calls in just a moment. But first, we'll go to our co-host for this evening, bringing on ProWrestling.net's John Moore, who's going to be here to talk Impact's Hard to Kill pay-per-view from Friday night. John, good to have you on the show again, talking Impact.
Good to be back. Interesting that, you know, it's good to like mention Impact these days. It's a really good alternative all of a sudden. It at one point, you know, like many people always thought of Impact Wrestling as like the cockroach of the pro wrestling industry, not in a bad way, in that like if a nuclear apocalypse happened, TNA/Impact will still be alive somehow. Hey, that's why the pay-per-view was called Hard to Kill, right, I guess. But yeah, no, glad to talk Impact with you guys.
Yeah, I know you've been covering Impact for a long time over there at .net, so good to have you here, someone who has extensive knowledge of the product and everything like that. So, of course, we'll talk WWE and AEW as well today with your phone calls and emails. We got one email about the Bloodline, so we'll get to that a little later on in the show. But, John, I want to start right off the bat with Hard to Kill. We'll go match by match through this card here, a card that started with the Impact World title in a Full Metal Mayhem match in which Bully Ray faced Josh Alexander. Now, the whole storyline leading up to this, Bully Ray winning a battle royal at the last pay-per-view, professing for a while to be different than the Bully Ray that had previously occupied Impact Wrestling. Of course, a tiger never changes his stripes, a leopard never changes his spots, whatever you want to use, whatever hackneyed expression you want to use. It was true in the case of Bully Ray because he did eventually turn back heel and was quite the force as a heel on top of the card. However, Josh Alexander did defeat him here to retain the Impact title. Tommy Dreamer was involved, ended up attacking Bully Ray. Josh Alexander's wife got involved, gave a low blow to Bully Ray here to close this out. So, John, this was, I mean, to lead off the show with an Impact title match, we know why, with Mickie James challenging for the Knockouts title in a title versus career match. That was the main event. But this one was extreme, as I think people would expect a Full Metal Mayhem match to be. Of course, your mileage may vary on this type of match. It's not for everybody, but I thought for what it was executed very well. And, you know, Bully Ray still has a lot of credibility, I think, as a top-level guy, especially given his history as a top guy in Impact. So I thought this was it was appropriate to use him in this role.
Oh, totally. Like, once you saw the rest of the card, too, you understand. I mean, you know, they didn't want anything overshadowed. Like, if you put him next to the women's title versus career match, that would have been a little tough to pull off. But, yes, no, talking about Bully Ray as a main event player in 2023. Because they set this whole thing up, it was their Royal Rumble thing where you win their Money in the Bank. And at the time, as, like, everyone else who was watching, we were like, it's Bully Ray. He's over 50. Steve Macklin's there. And a lot of people went in kicking and screaming as to Bully Ray as a world title contender. But the week after, cuts a really good babyface promo. He drags you through this really intricate where he's like stringing everyone along. Then he becomes a heel. Then he does simple but effective heel work. Continuous heat. You know, terrorizing Josh Alexander every week. And yes, the match was very, it was good, as good as you can get with a Full Metal Mayhem, which is their word for TLC match. And, you know, they had good usage of Josh Alexander's wife. And, you know, the problem with some hardcore matches, we see this sometimes when Tommy Dreamer's in there, but I used to complain about Abyss doing it all the time. Jimmy Havoc, sometimes Sami Callihan even, where sometimes when you see one person's style of hardcore match, it feels like it, you know, it's cut and paste. It's the same format every single time. I felt like Bully and Josh Alexander put some effort in there to make their match unique. On top of that, it was cool to see Josh Alexander in a different wrestling match type other than your traditional, you know, 45, you're not 45, yeah, okay, 15 minutes. His last big match before this was 60 minutes on Impact. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was good to see him outside of a traditional pro wrestling match too.
There are people who, you know, Bully Ray, he's got some opinions that rub people the wrong way. There's people who say, you know, he's just out for himself, looking out for himself. And so people will look at how this match progressed, and they saw Tommy Dreamer interfere on Josh Alexander's behalf, Josh Alexander's wife interfere on his behalf. Did it bother you that it took two sets of outside interference for the Impact World Champion Josh Alexander in his prime to defeat a, as you mentioned, you know, whatever age he is, 50-year-old Bully Ray, who's not a full-time wrestler in Impact? Did that sequence of events bother you at all?
So here's the thing. If you haven't been following the story as to how they got to this point, I can totally understand that perspective. And what I would recommend to people who watched that pay-per-view and didn't understand the context with the wife, with the two guys, Skyler and Hotch running out, with Tommy Dreamer running out, all that plays into everything they, all the seeds they planted leading up to this match. So yeah, no, I can understand both perspectives, but it didn't bother me. The only thing that bothered me a little bit, is just it's starting to get a little bit repetitive. If you notice Josh Alexander's recent feuds, and this might be going for a little while, is they tend to bring his wife in, they bring his wife into a lot of his feuds, even with the Kassarian one last time, where Kassarian just started trash-talking his wife for no reason, and then it just made Alexander go into angry mode for good reason. I don't want to see them overdo it. They did it right here because he attacked her at the last pay-per-view after the Kassarian match. And, yes, it makes sense. I just hope in future feuds with Josh Alexander, yeah, they don't go back to someone terrorizing his wife and son. But other than that, like I said, all the interference here made sense. It didn't feel too overbooked. And if they're going to, but what I hope comes out from this, because they wanted to give Bully Ray credibility, is maybe they, you know, maybe they have Bully Ray for longer than just this match. And hopefully down the road, he does put someone over like a Speedball Mike Bailey, another baby face in the wings that they want to build up.
Yeah, what was your sense? This will be the last question on this, and then we'll move on to the next match. But what was your sense as far as the future of Bully Ray and Impact? I mean, does it seem like do you figure him for another feud, or was this kind of just a one-off to help get Josh Alexander over to another level?
That I'm not 100% sure. See, I like going into this, I thought it was going to be a one-off. The only reason I say they might want to go a little further is they did put a lot of effort into making sure to protect Bully Ray, like by having him kick out of that frog splash stop out of the ladder. So, you know, there, because if anything, maybe he does do some, he feuds with another baby face, maybe tries to also elevate, Hotch and Skyler down the road. So I think it would be effective to maybe get one more program out of him before he goes back to hosting Busted Open Radio.
Match number two on the show was the Motor City Machine Guns retaining the Impact Tag titles in a four-team elimination match. Heath and Rhino were eliminated first by the Major Players. Major Players were eliminated next by Chris Bay, and then Chris Bay and Ace Austin were eliminated finally by the Motor City Machine Guns. So most of the top tag teams here involved in this match, where do you see the Motor City Machine Guns going now with three other teams, sort of the deck being cleared a little bit in the tag team division here?
I would imagine they're going to build up to a feud between the Machine Guns and Chris Bay and Ace Austin. They eliminated Heath and Rhino very quick. And I, They're like the one team where that I want to see break up. I don't know why they're still reliving their SmackDown 2015 days with Heath and Rhino.
What an era. What an era of SmackDown.
Hey, they were the inaugural SmackDown, the Blue Belt champions. So, yeah, there's something.
There you go.
Cheese and crackers. But it seems like Heath keeps going back to this, and was there that much nostalgia? I don't know. Anyways, the thing with the major players is they can be a good feud, but no one's really sure of the status of Matt Cardona, because it almost seemed like that was the case why they didn't put the belts on the major players back at the last when they took the belts off Heath and Rhino because of Cardona's status. But Ace Austin and Chris Bay, they've been getting a lot of steam, and they had that run in New Japan. I believe they were second place. Impact's been running their replays of their run in New Japan. They're back. And, of course, the Machine Guns are super reliable, and who can't have a good match against the Machine Guns? So I think this could be really fun if they want to go in that direction.
Yeah, by being the last team eliminated and also the major players getting back involved in the match at the end, too, could have given Bay and Austin a bit of an out and claim they deserve more of an opportunity against the Motor City Machine Guns for the Impact Tag titles. After this match, we had Kazarian come out and did an interview. He said he signed a long-term contract with Impact Wrestling. So the last time we saw him in Impact, it was part of that AEW invasion. And then he went away for a little while. He talked about earlier, he challenged Josh Alexander for the Impact title, went away for a little while, came back here on this pay-per-view, and claimed to have signed a long-term deal. So, historically, the only nostalgia that Impact is more of a mark for than the Monday Night Wars is their own nostalgia. And there's some good and bad in that. And I look at a guy like Kazarian signing a long-term deal, and I'm like, I mean, he's a name that longtime Impact Wrestling fans will recognize, but I don't know. I don't know how much he really moves the needle for people at this stage of his career. And he did a little bad-mouthing of AEW, which I was a little surprised at there in the promo. And so it's interesting. I think a company like Impact can always use depth because there's constantly a churn with their roster, with signing guys to short-term deals and, per event deals. So you have a lot of churn in a company, the level of Impact. So if you can sign a good hand like Kazarian to a longer-term deal, and I'm sure he's a great influence backstage as well, but I just don't know how much you really want to treat him like a big deal, especially coming off a run in AEW where he was kind of lesser than. And so what do you make of the Kazarian interview and where he slots into Impact here in 2023?
So I saw that Kazarian interview as more or Kazarian being signed by Impact in general as more of a way that Kazarian can get fulfilled while also giving a minor boost to the Impact roster. I don't think he's going to move the needle any bit. Like, no one's going to change to Impact Wrestling because the future Frankie Kazarian is there, and I say that because like, who remembered that his name was the future until they just kept reminding us that he was called the future for some reason? No one's going to be turning eyeballs towards Impact because of Frankie Kazarian, but at the same time, so some of Frankie Kazarian's criticism on AEW, it is inevitably true. We saw it with Dragon Lee recently, and we see it with people who join AEW and get lost on AEW Dark. It looked like, look at where Christopher Daniels was, where Frankie Kazarian was, like I said, a month. Mm-hmm. And this month, like I said, Daniels is back to wrestling on Dark every week. They have too deep of a roster, so where, no matter how good you, like I said, you can be Bandido, and you can go missing for months on AEW Dark and Dark Elevation. And as far as actual, empirical evidence, Frankie Kazarian did go to Impact and had that little run with that. He won the X Division title and got rid of it. But he did have a run before that when they had him on loan from AEW. and he got meaningful time, got to do back and forth promos, got to have a main event program that was pretty good against Josh Alexander. We saw it with Christian Cage a year ago, where he was, you know, the Impact World Champion, got to actually be the Mr. Rah-Rah TNA guy somehow, and it worked out. Kenny Omega getting meaningful character development time because it's a little bit crowded in AEW to get time to develop a character. So there's merit. Like I said, you go there, you know, you can, you know, sit down, take the paycheck from AEW, but you just might not get that fulfillment. So I can see it being attractive to go to Impact and get that creative fulfillment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see where he goes in Impact. And as you said, probably not a guy at the top of the card anymore, but you know, we'll have to see where he slots in. Match number three was Moose versus Joe Hendry in a digital media championship match. Moose initially won the match and via low blow and won the title. Then Santino Marella, using that name, by the way, came out and using that character as well, the accent as well. He was the new director of authority in Impact Wrestling, and he restarted the match. Scott D'Amore was injured on the previous Impact Wrestling on an attack by Bully Ray. And so on the restart, Joe Hendry defeats Moose to retain the Digital Media Championship. Did it sound like the crowd was more into Moose in this match? And I couldn't really figure out why.
I had no clue either, because Joe Hendry's been getting good reactions at recent Impact tapings. But as far as this match, the match was really good. Both these are two like bigger dudes who can do some athletic and feats of strength. But I felt like it did get overshadowed a little bit with the return of Santino Marella.
Yeah, and we haven't seen really an Impact Joe Hendry's matches go this length. I mean, he's done a lot of character work and a lot of vignettes and stuff like that and a lot of shorter matches, but we haven't really had the opportunity to see him in a match of this length. So that was good to see. I'm a huge Joe Hendry fan. For anyone who's listened to this podcast, we've talked about Impact Wrestling. His theme song gets stuck in my head all the time. Inevitably, when I listen to it, it'll get stuck in my head. So that was good. I mean, what do you make of Santino? Not only Santino being brought in as director of authority, but using the Santino Marella character, the accent developed in WWE. What did you make of that decision here?
Yeah, that was a nice, actual throwback because, there was that one point by the end of Santino Marella's WWE run, and we like see with R-Truth on occasion where they would take a joke and run it to the ground to the point where you just got sick of seeing Santino on TV, especially with that whole Cobra thing that they just wouldn't get rid of. Santino's been gone for years. And absence makes the heart grow fonder. It was cool nostalgia thing to see. And because we have seen Santino on Impact in recent years, he's just gone under Anthony Corelli and acted like a normal, just like his normal guy.
Yeah.
But it was a nice throwback. And it's interesting. They're going to run a little bit with a comedic authority figure, which I think should be fine as long as they don't run into the ground. I hope this is a short-term thing and that we get got the more coming back once he's done selling the attack. And kudos to Scott D'Amore for finally selling something. Like if you've been watching Impact the last like 3 or 4 years, Scott D'Amore is the most protected babyface in the entire company. He walks up to like Moose, W. Morrissey, eight Honor No More guys, yells in their face, and he has this like plot armor shield where no one wants to like stand up to him or in fact they just like run away from him, and he just like, you know, they always come to him with like a demand. He always turns them down, gives them something better. So he's finally selling something, so good on Scott D'Amore. And he's like, and I joking aside, he's been a very good authority figure otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get that. I get that complaint. But I think too often in professional wrestling, we've seen authority figures who have no real authority. and who are just like these either boneheads or they're like wilting flowers and they don't make any decisions, and the decisions they make don't make any sense, and they cower to these guys who they're supposed to have authority over. Like, I know they're professional wrestlers and I know they're tough, but I mean, in this context, like, if you're in charge, you got to act like you're in charge, and otherwise, like, these guys should be getting fired if they're treating you like dirt and beating you up constantly and whatever like that. So I get the complaint about him not selling, but to me it's refreshing to see a – not even a babyface. Like, I think he's kind of a straight shooter down the middle type, and actually have some backbone and actually make decisions and tough decisions and force wrestlers to stick with it. So I'm a little more lenient on how D'Amore has been portrayed during his time as authority figure on Impact.
I don't know. I totally understand. But, you know, I was just saying it in more of the case of the people who he should be selling to, like Big Bill W. Yep. Morrissey or Moose or Rebellion, you know, this like guys who technically don't even work for the company, and he ended up giving them
right.
a contract afterwards anyway.
Fair enough.
It's those moments. But, you know, I thought he's been – solid, and it you don't want to have like a Teddy Long by the end of his run where he's just like crying in a corner and getting bullied by all everyone. So.
Yeah, I agree. It's a fine line. It's a happy medium, I think, is what we're looking for. This is Wrestling Night in America for January 15th. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks along with .NET's John Moore here talking Impact Hard to Kill, taking your phone calls, 515-605-9345. We've got Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland up first, followed by Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. So let's hit the phones and go to Ryan first up. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's your first question for us?
My first question is, who do you think would be the best person to beat Mickie James and put her into retirement?
Tough question. I mean, based on the booking, it looks like Masha Slamovich is going to get that first opportunity. Now, whether she's the one to knock off Mickie, I don't know. I think it's you know, there's a thought that based on the push that Slamovich has gotten, it's not out of the realm of possibility. You know, a rematch with Jordan Grace down the line, especially given how the match went down, and Mickie kind of bucking expectations, I think, in getting the victory over Jordan Grace in the main event. I think she's got to be in the conversation. Killer Kelly, I think, is someone who I've loved that she, you know, the character work she's done in Impact, the vignettes to build her up. She's been away for a while, came back at Hard to Kill. I'm not sure her character makes a lot of sense as beating and retiring Mickie James. So I would put Jordan Grace and Masha Slamovich the top two on the list. Deonna Purrazzo, I mean, if you want to get some real heat, Deonna Purrazzo is someone who can do it. Though if you go Deonna, I think you would have had her win that four-way that we'll talk about a little later on. But, John, what's your impression on who that could be to knock off Mickie James?
But as far as the whole last rodeo stipulation, they made it seem like it was the end of the last rodeo. Do we know if she won the title that the whole her next loss is losing her career is like, you know, do we know if this is still up or that she can lose and still wrestle?
I was under the impression that, you know, that still is in effect. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get more answers to that on TV.
Exactly, because no, so the reason I bring that up, because it was mildly surprising that Masha Slamovich won the match, because you would think that they would maybe have an intermediary feud or two for Mickie James as champion there before Masha dethrones her. Because, I think that Masha Slamovich would be the one person that Impact has built. They've invested a lot of TV time and really good build to her, to the point where I think that should be the best payoff for the last rodeo. It was weird that they had Taylor. She's now a witch now. They had the witch Taylor Wilde beat Masha Slamovich clean this last week. That was odd. But it was smart to have her take the loss. But I thought, like I said, it would have made sense to put Deonna Purrazzo over in the last match, have her lose to Mickie, have her maybe lose to Killer Kelly or Taylor Wilde next, and then go, you know, have a match against Masha, because like before they did the rebuild of Jordynne Grace, I thought they were building up like Masha's undefeated streak versus Mickey's career, but they did a good job actually rebuilding Jordynne Grace, but so no fault on them for that. But yeah, so as far as taking the title off, I would think the most credible pick that Impact has is Masha Slamovic.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, putting two and two together with her winning the number one contender match, and you wonder how long Mickey holds the title, that would be a guess that makes a lot of sense. Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
I have a question on Scott D'Amore. Do you think they'll play up that Janelle Shaw is his girlfriend, like possibly have Bully Ray try to do something to her or some other wrestler? This came out as, you know, public knowledge. I guess a few weeks ago they made it public instead of like keeping it secret recently.
That's news to me. I had not heard that. I don't know. I don't think they would make that a storyline. That's just a guess. But I guess if you know, to me, and it doesn't matter who it is that Scott D'Amore would be dating, like, I don't think you want to focus on Scott D'Amore, major storyline character. Like, that's just my impression. And especially, like, okay, Bully Ray is, you know, what's the payoff there? Like, he's not going to fight Giselle Shaw, I don't think. He's not going to fight Scott D'Amore, I hope. So, like, if Bully Ray keeps this up, like, what's the payoff? I mean, it would fit Bully Ray's character. We've seen him go after women before. But I just don't – I'm trying to think of what the payoff would be for that, and I don't see it, John.
Yeah, no, it would be – as I mentioned in Josh Alex Sanders' plays, it would be a little bit redundant, and I'm pretty sure, you know, like, Bully Ray's a smart enough guy to have a fresh feuds. And they have Giselle Shaw in different programs anyway. Okay, we have – Bully Ray go against Scott D'Amore. Who's going over here? Seriously.
Not the fans, that's for sure. Yeah. Let's hope that one stays in the vault of creative ideas for Impact Wrestling. Ryan, back to you for your third and final question for us.
Final question is on Daniel Bryan. Who do you think will be the final person he beats to earn his shot at MJF at the pay-per-view?
I don't know. I mean, it could be, I don't have a good feeling one way or another on who it is. I think we all know that's going to be the end result, is he does face MJF at the pay-per-view. But as far as who he has to beat to get there, we've seen him beat Takeshita. You know, there's others on the list coming up, but, you know, I just don't have a strong feeling either way on who he would face. I mean, it's like a tour de force of Daniel Bryan dream matches. So I really don't think you can go wrong with anyone, John.
No, you can't. And this, I mean, remember, as Daniel Bryan pointed, or Bryan Danielson pointed out, it is MJF's MO where you have to, fight through this opponent after opponent to get to him. It could be anyone, probably someone who is in the company. Yo, hey, have them bring Okada over. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with AEW. Like, you know, if this was WWE, you could say, okay, it's the potential opponents are confined to wrestlers under WWE contract. But because of Tony Khan's philosophy about the business and the partnerships he has with other wrestling companies, it widens that so much, it's really hard to pin down a prediction on who you think it could be.
Yeah, no, Jay, Jay White might be, and even if he was with New Japan or wasn't, his contract's coming down. Maybe he might be able to get a good 2-week thing out of facing Bryan Danielson too. So,
could you imagine the level of smarminess Jay White and MJF sharing a screen? Oh my goodness!
And Bryan.
No, come on. only if he was in his heel vegan character in WWE,
That's
I think
true.
We could include him in that. Ryan, thanks for the phone call tonight. I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. We got a lot of phone calls tonight. This is impressive. I'm pleased. So, look,
how soon until we just get the wave of Vince McMahon is back, Saudi Arabia, all that stuff.
I don't know. I'm trying my best to hold it off.
Let's go.
We'll see. We'll see. Maybe it'll be this phone call. Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland, you're up on Wrestling Night in America. Good to hear from you tonight. What's on your mind?
Good to hear from you, Greg, and it's an honor. Thanks for taking my call. I have no clue what Ryan was talking about, but like you said, I hope they keep that thought in the vault. I do want to say that I thought that they would go with Mickey winning this match over Jordan. It makes perfect sense. I had mentioned this on one of the call-in shows a couple weeks back. Now, if she is not going to retire the belt, I see her putting over Masha, and I could see it from a mile away, simply because when Masha Slamovich was pinned by Taylor Wilde a few weeks back on Impact Wrestling, I sensed that we would get the reverse at the pay-per-view, which is what we got Friday night. So I'm glad they went in that direction. And, you know, if Mickey isn't going to relinquish the belt and retire from Impact as champion, which he quite possibly could do, I would think that they would put Masha over as the next champion, because she does great work not only in Impact but all over. She's one of the hottest acts as far as female wrestlers on the independent scene. So I think that would be a good call, as you guys alluded to. Do you think that maybe Mickey will retire the belt, or you think she's going to put someone like Marshall or Killer Kelly over?
I would like to see, you know, I think this has been a pretty successful storyline for Impact Wrestling, and so I would like to see it continue. I would like to see, you know, Mickey defend the title now with the added stipulation of, okay, if she loses the title, she's also losing her career. And so I think that brings an added layer of drama as well. So I would like to see her continue. I wouldn't like to see her. Plus, I mean, like you said, whether it's Masha Slamovich, whether it's Jordynne Grace, whether it's Killer Kelly or whomever it might be, Deonna Purrazzo, the heat that wrestler would get by not only winning the title but also retiring a legend in Mickie James, someone held in such high esteem in Impact Wrestling, I think that's going to be good for the wrestler. And you don't get that if Mickie retires as champion and you do some kind of a tournament or something like that. So, John, I would definitely like to see her continue as champion.
Exactly, but it goes back to the finish or to that whole number one contendership thing too. So here's the thing: I don't think they're setting up Masha Slamovich to face Mickey James at the next Impact Plus show. You would hope that that Mickey James retires on this national TV. So to the point where, like, that's what made Masha winning a little bit surprising, because with Deonna over, we could have had Killer Kelly get an intermediary feud. If they still have that whole her career is over after she loses, it does make her matches have that added layer of drama, makes the near falls against her really compelling. No, I'm with you there.
Reverend Keith, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Well, moving on from there, I would like to see Josh Alexander's next title defense be against someone like a Steve Maclin, or maybe they'll bring somebody else in to face him. We'll see. I think Josh is a very worthy champion. He's been champion, I think, since last April when he defeated Moose. I heard John mention that they normally like to incorporate Jay Chung, his wife, who is a well-trained wrestler, in his feuds. But I hope they stop this, because they've gone to the well one too many times. So yeah. Do you foresee Steve Maclin being his next challenger?
I don't know. I don't have a good feeling either way. I would like to see that. It gets some new blood in that main event scene, and I love the job that Macklin's been doing. He won the Falls Count Anywhere match that we'll talk about a little later on over Rich Swann. So I think you've got the argument. You've got somebody like Jonathan Gresham now in Impact Wrestling who would assume is going to be portrayed as a top guy, and he has the credibility as a former ROH champion. And you would like to see, you talk about new blood at the top of the card. Gresham would fit that bill as well. So I think Macklin and Gresham, off the top of my head, John, are two guys who I would absolutely love to see in a feud with Josh Alexander sooner rather than later over that Impact title.
Totally. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I was hoping that we would get Steve Macklin when they did their whole Money in the Cup match. I thought Steve Macklin would have won and be the challenger. It was something that you have to cash in. So, but I was hoping that he would be the person to get that. I said Money in the Cup. It's like a cheap looking trophy. They paid $5 for it. But anyways, no, I thought that he should have got it because, yeah, they put Bully Ray over. It took Bully Ray actually putting on really good performances to turn everyone who's watched the show around on him because Bully Ray has been so talented. Like I said, at that time, Steve Macklin seemed like the guy who deserves it. But, because Steve Macklin, he was the forgotten guy from The Forgotten Son, and people forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, he shaved his head. I didn't expect all that forgotten mess, but he changed
his look. You did
well there. I guess. He changed his look. He looks like a monster heel, does really good promos. But he takes a lot of losses and shrugs those losses off, has a really good story behind. They're also doing this thing where he's talking about he has beaten world champion after world champion after world champion, but they keep putting him in feuds against, like, Rich Swann and stuff. He has acknowledged that. So, hey, maybe they can put him in a few more feuds that where he can get more frustration. And I think, yes, Steve Macklin might be one of the guys you can see take the belt off of Alexander, but someone we can also see go up against Alexander is they run back Speedball Mike Bailey, who had that 59 and 49-second match 59 minutes and 49-second match against Josh Alexander a few weeks ago out of nowhere. It was unadvertised, and no one spoiled it for anyone. That was kind of cool. They had this really epic, around 60-minute match, and both guys look good. They can always run that back and maybe have Speedball Mike Bailey, if they have him locked down, be the guy to take the belt off of Alexander.
And back to you, Reverend Keith, for your final question for us tonight.
Great call, John Moore. I completely forgot about that. That was an epic confrontation. Those two really had what they are calling now, quote unquote, a banger of a match.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to see them run that back. Like you said, even if Macklin isn't the guy, I would love to see Mike Bailey being slotted into that position. My third and final point, gentlemen, of the evening is the tag team division in Impact Wrestling. I'm a huge fan of the Motor City Machine Guns, whom I've followed since 2004. Now, I can see Bay and Austin, going into a title program with these two. I think those four guys would have excellent chemistry. They are all capable of high-flying maneuvers, flippy stuff, as well as great mat technical skills in wrestling. Do you foresee them incorporating the Bay and Austin combination fresh off their run in Japan against the Motor City Machine Guns for the titles?
Yeah, I think John earlier suggested them as really the top level of potential challengers. And I think, Bay and Austin, Impact didn't put those video packages of their time in Japan on TV for nothing. Like, I don't think they would have done that had they not had bigger plans for Bay and Austin as a team down the line. And I think they're two of the more talented guys. They stand out in the tag division. And, of course, good matches. That would be an end result of this. So it just, John, to me, stands out as, you know, you do Heath and Rhino again, like you said, that tag team has run its course. The major players, you could do that, but you just don't know the status of Matt Cardona. A lot of rumors that he could be ending up in WWE sooner rather than later, since that's where Chelsea Green seems to be headed. And there's not a ton more depth right now in the tag division at Impact. So Bay and Austin, I mean, unless we're missing anyone, John, just seem to be the obvious candidates for that next feud.
They're the obvious, and they're the safest bet, and you can count on them to put on some good matches. One thing they do go with the Motor City Machine Guns a lot is they do like to do a lot of best of five matches. If they really want to not have to work, you know, because they need to build other tag teams. When we mentioned the other two in those four way, meaning, you know, they just don't have too much tag team depth, they can maybe put these two teams in a long feud. That when you do best of five, it's automatic, and the Guns can totally pull that off. Maybe, you know, while, you know, during that time, you know, have the Bay and Ace, you know, get to the five matches, not go all the way, bring in some new teams, and maybe have Bay and Austin get that down the road. The only other team I can think of in the division at the moment is what's that team, the design? You know, there's Diener, Con, and Allen Angels. Hey, and Callahan, No More Sammy, I guess, is a part of that group now. Hey, he shaved his hair. He
Crazy
must have
Steve
did it for
and
a reason.
Black Taurus, right? They're another
Crazy
thing.
Steve and Black Taurus, DK, yes. Though they, you know, but they lose a lot. So usually
pretty
they're
far,
like the first
yeah,
team.
Yeah, pretty far down the tag team ladder.
Mm-hmm. No, and they've been doing a little bit of work, and it seems like they're doing a lot of work with Torbrus in the X division. But that's also what you can do with the X division. You could take any two, you know, just wrestlers and build them up for the tag titles. And there might be teams from out of the company. They had Dave Finley and Juice Robinson at one point just come in randomly. A team that had a really good run in Impact, and I think better. Then, like this, when we see them in other places, is Aussie Open, and I say that because when you see Aussie Open in New Japan, and when you see Aussie Open in AEW when they made appearances there, they always came off as Will Ospreay's little buddies. But when they had that, they had those like mini runs in Impact. I thought that like both guys got to really define themselves really well. You had Kyle Fletcher, the high flyer, and Mark Davis, the powerhouse of the group. If they could bring Aussie Open over, I think that could be a fun feud. And it would make sense because of the whole New Japan Strong title thing.
Yeah, best of five, Aussie Open versus Motor City Machine Guns. Sign me up for that. All right, Reverend Keith, thank you for the phone call this week. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thank you so much, and I agree with you, John, about Aussie Open. I'd love to see them. Take care. Have a great week. Be blessed.
All right. Thank you, Reverend Keith. Let's finish up the rest of the Hard to Kill card before we go back to the phones. Match number four was the Masha Slamovich match, in which she pinned Taylor Wilde in a four-way Knockouts number one contender match over Deonna Purrazzo and Killer Kelly. And you mentioned on TV before Taylor Wilde defeating Masha Slamovich and then returning the favor here. This is the dreaded 50-50 booking that we always talk about, John. You know, Masha, I think the way she has been portrayed, her losing to someone the caliber of Taylor Wilde, even with Taylor Wilde's new persona, whatever that might be, I don't think it helped. Like, it didn't – I don't know – I don't think she was as strong in winning as she could have been had she not lost to Taylor Wilde. So I didn't really like that booking because it just smacks of that 50-50 booking, that unnecessary 50-50 booking that I just don't think this match needed, and I don't think Masha Slamovich needed it.
And Impact has been really good at not falling into that 50-50 booking crack, which is why when we saw Impact and Masha takes a not only clean but competitive loss to Taylor Wilde, who's like Teflon. She can take losses. She was the original plucky baby face of TNA. And it was her thing where she can take losses, and pull that wing off against Awesome Kong. But No, so it was so odd. And what I and what made it odder was, so they did such a good job with Masha Slamovich leading to her match against Jordan Grace, where it felt like a foregone conclusion that this was going to be the first competitive match that Slamovich would have, but she would have beat Jordan Grace. And it took Jordan Grace having to reinvent herself and having a great match against Masha to like this, subvert that expectation in a good way. And there's the thing is we haven't seen – so they'd set the match. It was Taylor Wilde versus Masha. They had it was like 8 minutes. Masha didn't have a match that went 8 minutes against former Impact champion. So it was this out of the way, and Taylor Wilde changes her character every month. But – yeah, it did take away a bit some of the impact. And, yeah, I know, and we talked about it because, like, what was the point? They probably could have got a match against, you know, like have Killer Kelly pull out the pin and have Masha just destroy Wilde in a minute or two later down the road or something. So, yes, they did fall into the parody booking, but if they did parody booking, who are they protecting? Because I think it kind of dragged everyone down.
Yeah. A lot of women I like in that match. I like Deanna, I like Masha, certainly, and like Killer Kelly as well. Match number five, Steve Maclin over Rich Swann in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Raven on commentary. I love when they just pull him out of the mothballs to do commentary on these shows. But, yeah, I mean, this was all over the place. Did the fact that it followed the Full Metal Mayhem match, did it kind of lose a little bit of its luster there? Like, did it feel like kind of a been there, done that with some of the stuff, or did they keep it different enough from Full Metal Mayhem to you to make it worthwhile?
So while I thought there the effort was there, and I thought they did a good enough job to differentiate it from the Full Metal Mayhem match, but because it's another no disqualification match, it you can't help but go, well, the other one had a blood high spot and, you know, a compelling thing involving families or whatnot. And at the same time, you're pretty much used to Rich Swann being the gatekeeper of Impact these days. So, yes, the opening match did take away. But, you know, at the same time, I can understand not flip-flopping them, not having the Maclin match open and not having the world title match anywhere near the Mickey versus Jordan Grace match. So I understand what they did. They did try their best. You know, when you go Falls Count Anywhere, you try to brawl anywhere but the ring, and the effort was put in there to do that. But yes, you just can't help. And you know, this match didn't have to really stand out on the show. It was a good match. The right guy went over. Maclin steamrolls over another former world champion, and yes, it did its job.
Match number six was Eddie Edwards over Jonathan Gresham. Oh. This was your wrestling match of the evening. Good wrestling from both of these guys. PCO, who we last saw being buried in the Las Vegas desert, came out, sand still in his mouth, by the way, and attacked Eddie Edwards, the former leader of his crew. So a couple things here. First is Jonathan Gresham. Now in Impact, were you surprised that he, not only that he lost, but he was kind of shoved aside for a post-match angle with Eddie Edwards in this role? Does that tell you anything about where Impact sees Jonathan Gresham slotted going forward?
Not too much, and the reason I say that is because it seems like they have him to at least for one or two years. The reason that they had him take the loss here, I think they're just going to take their time with him. I hope that's the case. And Impact in recent years hasn't done anything to show me that they wouldn't. What is weird sometimes is Impact really loves to protect Eddie Edwards. It's been going on for years. Like Honor No More, when that was a thing, all of those guys lost except Eddie Edwards. They really like to protect Eddie Edwards. It's weird sometimes because like you just when they he was the Bound for Glory main event, and it's just hard to like really take him seriously as the Bound for Glory main event, but. You know, they gave Eddie the win, the clean win, the credible win, it makes sense that they're going to build back to PCO. I don't see it as a slight to Jonathan Gresham. It's okay to take losses to credible wrestlers as long as, you know, they take their time, they don't rush, and get to where they want to with Jonathan Gresham. Like, so maybe they can use this and, you know, continuing to build him up on TV slowly and surely, eventually to a match with Josh Alexander, which we would assume is the eventual trajectory of a wrestler like Jonathan Gresham.
I thought the presentation of PCO here was spot on, by the way, like totally consistent with his character, that he would just kind of like, I assume, like get out of the desert and walk to the pay-per-view, presumably, and just kind of like take out Eddie Edwards. Like that fits for me. That tracks with his character. So I like that.
He still had the dirt in his mouth. He didn't.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
I had no clue. Exactly. he was just erred all the way. He didn't spit it out. Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about PCO, I get a kick out of PCO, but I can see him being a bit of like a turnoff to some people with the whole Frankenstein electricity mess. But no, I get a kick out of the whole Frankenstein monster thing.
For sure. The main event, Mickie James over Jordynne Grace to win the Knockouts Championship title versus career match. She wins with a tornado DDT. There were a couple of other teases. She's got so many signature moves that, you know, you really bought the near falls at various times because there were a number of moves she could have used to put away Jordynne Grace and Jordan would kick out of them. They really, and I don't know if this was on purpose, I'm sure it was, but it just felt like a big swerve in a good way. But it felt like Impact was kind of preparing the viewer to say, okay, you know, this is kind of where it comes to an end for Mickie James. They had Tara in the audience, a contemporary of Mickie James for a long time. Mickie's family was there. They kind of, you know, this was – and really losing in a title match on pay-per-view, so you've reached the pinnacle being in a title match – I think kind of where a lot of people expected the road to end for Mickie James. I'm not sure a lot of people expected her to win the title. But did you buy into what Impact was selling here, that this was going to be Mickie James' last rodeo here in this match, or did you expect her to win?
Personally, I thought it could have gone either way. Yes, I did buy in to it, all things considered. The problem with the last couple of Mickie James, it's not necessarily a problem. So they did Deonna Purrazzo, I forget who else. It was several wrestlers they had go against Mickie James recently. The downside with this match is it got to a point where you knew Mickie wasn't losing until she got to the Knockouts title. And now that she's there, I commend Impact for just laying it on thick by doing that documentary, that really good documentary piece from a couple weeks ago, by bringing the family over sans Nick Aldis. No clue where he was. Tara, a.k.a. Victoria, did a great job selling throughout the night that Mickie, this might be the end of her career. I thought, yeah, it doesn't hurt to to really build towards the story. This is the same thing with the Bully Ray feud, where it doesn't hurt to keep building heat. This is building heat and development in a different way. And yes, I commend Impact for doing that.
Was it, after you've seen everything and after you've seen how the match developed, there really was no other place on the card. This had to be the main event, right?
Totally. With the amount of stakes in this match, totally. And I really love that finish too. You don't see a finish so when you have that main event 15 plus minute match, usually you expect a bunch of finisher kicks out into that one finish. And so it was very cool to see it, just come out of nowhere out with a tornado DDT, and it made that pop that much better. They did a great job with the build to the finish and the placement on the card.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. See what's on the mind of the callers. 862 area code is where we go next. 862, please state your name and where you're calling from.
It's Kylan. Greg, how are you, my friend?
Kylan, good to hear from you again. It's been a while. How are you?
Excellent. How are you and John doing?
I think we're doing pretty well. It's a Sunday night. We're talking wrestling. Couldn't be much better than that, I don't think. What's your first of your three pack of questions for us tonight, Kylan?
Okay, let's see. With the apparent impending split of the...
Hello, Kylan, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, I think we lost you there for a second. Could you start that question again for us, please?
With the apparent and impending split of the Raw and SmackDown tag team titles under the sort of administration of Triple H, and with Vince McMahon not being a proponent of these separate brands in the last few years, does this actually mean that we have less to fear than we really think in terms of Vince McMahon meddling in creative, and then in 3 to 6 months we're all going to be like, I can't believe we were so scared that all of these bad things were going to happen, and things have been great the last 6 months.
Oh, we got our first Vince McMahon question,
yep.
John, right up your alley. I know you were looking forward to it. I don't know. There's just so much up in the air. I think if Vince did come back and or meddle or do anything creative, and we have no indication that's going to be the case, and in fact we have just the opposite. You know, the quote that, you know, he's not looking to come back. Of course, you know, take that for whatever it's worth, which may not be much. But I think that, you know, Triple H, his booking, you know, honestly has not set the world on fire, but it's been good. It's been decent. I think there's a lot less peaks and valleys than there were under Vince. I think with Vince, you got some highs, but you got some really low lows. Whereas Triple H, it's been more kind of a steady stream. And, you know, I know there are also reports that, you know, Triple H hasn't even executed his full vision for creative yet, that's going to come, you know, as we get closer to WrestleMania. So whether or not you believe those reports, that's up in the air too. But, yeah, I don't know, John. The Vince news does not make me feel great about the possibility of him coming back and doing creative again. I think that's a net negative if that happens. I don't think there's really a lot of positive to come from it. And not only that, I mean, you know, you can talk about just the creative and what we see on the screen, but the locker room and all the reports you're seeing about how looser everything is, how much more relaxed everybody is under Triple H, you know, that's going to change too under Vince. And I think that is really more of a concern if Vince is back doing creative or even doing something where he's at TV almost every week. That is even more of an issue, probably, that morale than the actual creative that you're going to see on the screen.
Exactly. I mean, no, because I can, you know, this the whole locker room right now, I can just understand why there's a lot of uncertainty. He can go out in public and say, well, you know, he said it initially, we're still going to move forward with, you know, Nick Khan, Stephanie McMahon, and Paul Levesque moving forward. Stephanie is gone in 2 days. So, no, and it's not just that. It's Vince is a quirky dude with quite the ego, to the point where he can do anything. Look what he did with this hostile takeover. It was a swift. Yeah, it could happen at any moment. This is the same guy who fired his son seemingly elbowed his daughter out the way, demoted Hunter twice. You know, I mean, I can,
yeah.
And I go, just going through the pandemic where a lot of people lost their jobs all in a snap of a finger. Hey, he's the Thanos of WWE right now. Look at that. But I can understand why a lot of people will be on eggshells. Hey, I'm like reviewing NXT these days is fun for me because like they got rid of a lot of the weird, goofy 90s vocational stuff that they wanted to build up for Vince. And yes, mm-hmm. there's a fear that at any moment, that's the thing, you know, here's the fun thing. And we all hope that Vince stays in the corner and does the sale. That's the best switch, but can he? That's the thing.
Yeah. Really not a lot of evidence that that's going to be where he stops. I mean, a guy like him, I mean, this is a power play, and it's being done for power. And for a power-hungry guy like Vince, that just doesn't stop. He wants control over every little thing. This is his company. He built it, and that's how he sees it. He wants to have the say. You know, if he's going to cook the meals, he wants to shop for groceries. The old Bill Parcells line, right? So I have a hard time seeing that stop. Just based on his history and knowing what he's like. But anyway, Kylan, we'll go back to you for your second question for us.
This second question sort of piggybacks off of the first one regarding William Regal's role as Vice President of Global Talent Relations. The recent signing of Lucha standout Dragon Lee, even amidst all this company turmoil, will we continue to see William Regal and Gabe Sapolsky scout and sign major independent / international talent, or do you think Vince will all of a sudden say, who let these small people back on my show?
I think that as long as, you know, it all depends on how much power Triple H is going to keep. You know, there's the creative end, but there's also the hiring and firing end. And we've seen him hire a lot of wrestlers who he worked with in NXT. And so if he's able to keep that role of, personnel and stuff like that, then I assume we see that continue. I don't think that's a role Vince takes on without also being involved in creative. So there's a lot of questions about roles going forward, and right now we have to assume they're going to stay the same for at least the time being, John. But do you think anything changes in terms of the hiring and firing practices? You know, there's a discussion I listened to on The Fix with Todd Martin and Vince McMahon about, you know, Triple H making decisions and kind of looking over his shoulder and wondering, you know, is this a decision Vince would approve of? And now that becomes more extreme because of the added role that Vince has taken on. Still not creative and still not, you know, doing the hiring and firing, but does Vince's new role, do you think, give Triple H pause about signing wrestlers like Dragon Lee or other independent or stars from other countries that Vince would not have touched?
I mean, the most productive thing I should see Paul Levesque doing is see Vince, in his rear view mirror and see that as inspiration to be all, you know, this, you know, steam, all steam forward and continuing to do, you know, enact that vision that you wanted to do more than ever to show that you're going to promote a good product, a positive working environment, because it might shake things up with locker room morale and maybe even tempt Vince to take the reins back. Because here's what here's the worst case scenario, and either way, worst case scenario, either he doesn't go all steam forward, and just Vince all of a sudden, I'm back in charge of creative, and we start seeing the 24/7 title cartoon characters pop up again. It's going to happen, either way. So you might as well continue to enact your vision. And if that vision continues to persist, we will get that presumed NXT Europe that they've been planning. And it seems like in the last month or two, they've redirected, not fully, they're still going after those collegiate athletes, but also gone back to scouting really good independent talent like a Dragon Lee. They brought in Kylie Rae for a tryout. They're also bringing California standout Carl Fredericks, who's mm-hmm. really good, and I got to see develop in the local indies. It seems like they should continue to move forward, but not be surprised if Vince just all of a sudden is, "Hi, I'm back in creative, and Bruce Pritchard's back in talent relations." So.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kylan, back to you for your third and final question for us tonight.
And my final question, in regards to George Berrios and Michelle Wilson, and actually the WWE Network, with the recent return of George Berrios and Michelle Wilson to the WWE Board of Directors in approximately 2 weeks, because George and Michelle cannot formally be installed on the board for another 2 weeks, marking their 3-year anniversary of termination, from what I understand, and with reports that Disney CEO Robert Iger and Comcast CEO Brian Roberts do not wish to buy WWE with Vince McMahon involved at all, do you see a scenario where if Vince refuses to accept a sale offer from a buyer because they refuse to work with him due to his misconduct allegation, that Vince will say, "My God, I gave Peacock or I gave Fox all of this content and they refused to work with me. I've always been a pioneer in entertainment. I know I said we weren't a technology company, but we're going back to, by God, WWE Network."
That would surprise me. I just think there's too much money in the deal with NBC. And, it is interesting because there's a lot of different fallout from a WWE sale. Depending on who they sell to, that's going to perhaps lead you to what networks they're going to negotiate with when the deal comes up. And that's supposed to be, I think, at the end of this year, they're going to start negotiating with, NBC and Fox and for the SmackDown and Raw television rights fees. So, John, there's so much up in the air. Like, we don't know who's going to buy it. We don't know what that effect is going to have on the negotiations for television rights, which is the bread and butter of WWE revenue. And we don't know what the fallout of Vince McMahon reinstalling himself is going to be. His opinion is that he can find the best deal for the company, that him being a part of the negotiations for the sale or for the next television rights fees is a positive for the company. But I don't think that is an opinion shared by many people, certainly some members of the board who resigned. And, you know, that remains to be seen whether the networks he ends up negotiating with feel that way. And then on top of all that is I think there was the first stockholder lawsuit filed recently about Vince and the way he reinstalled himself as at the head of the board of directors and basically putting himself back in charge of the company. So there's just so much out there that, and, you know, honestly, like, I report on wrestling. Like, I don't know the machinations of publicly traded companies, and I don't know the ins and outs of how they work and how sales of publicly traded companies work and all that stuff. That's not my forte. So I'm kind of learning as I go here. So I don't have a lot of answers to this kind of stuff. It's a lot of just sit back and watch how it unfolds. But I think there's going to be a lot of domino effects that come out of this, John.
It does seem, and you know, and those board members who didn't agree, it was a unanimous agreement that Vince McMahon returning at any level would have been detrimental not only to a sale but towards, you know, future development of WWE as a whole for, you know, both this a potential sale and the stockholders. And we see the reductions in the board of directors as a result of that. You know, it is interesting, yes, seeing this chain reaction. So yes, you know, Vince came out with that press release by himself a couple of weeks ago talking about how, you know, I'm back because, you know, I can, it's like, I'm the only person who can get the best
deal for WWE. I alone can fix it.
Yeah,
that's a very, that rings true from a certain political ad.
Yeah, no, but in a way though, is, you know, so in his mind, he's totally right, which has you fearing that the most lucrative deal for Vince McMahon is to get that Saudi Arabia deal done, because that's going to get him the biggest payout for the company, allows them to turn it private, which gives him the easiest chance to unoppose, regain a good amount of power. The detrimental part with that is you're sinking your public perception in that, not in, you know, who cares about like the public in terms of business, but what I mean by that is you lose out on working with a lot of the big, you know, television rights deals. When you talk about if say WWE gets, you know, 100% owned by Saudi Arabia, you go to the LIV, the golf thing that Saudi put a lot of money into, and, you know, locked down a lot of good talent and everything. You know, like how they can't you know, get a TV deal because, you know, just all of the baggage that comes with being a part of, you know, that Saudi trust. And, you know, and Kylan does bring up a good point, and I didn't think of it, because here's what can happen if they, you know, this is like the worst case scenario in the public's eyes. Like we saw it when the unconfirmed, you know, turned out not to be true report came out, you know, an unverified report came out last week that, oh, WWE, you know, was sold to Saudi Arabia. It had the proper reaction. Like, no one wanted to see it happen. It's, you know, all the memes were out there with like Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny running in with money in the bank to buy it from under them. But no, in all seriousness, what Kylan brought up was what had me think it was bringing up George Berrios and Michelle Wilson. The reason they were gotten rid of was because Vince decided to go with the Peacock deal, and their knees were, they were settled in continuing with WWE Network. Say if they make a deal with Saudi Arabia, they have that WWE Network infrastructure. They can, they do have some sort of infrastructure to, you know, sustain WWE to a certain point and eventually, you know, find a buyer. You know, we're going with the Saudi thing, and Vince, you know, talking about the guy being to get the best deal, he has that connection. He can get that big paycheck, but for the TV viewer, for the stockholder, and just for pro wrestling in general, not, you know, it, like I said, to Vince, his ego and his pocket, that works. For everyone else, not so much.
I have a feeling this is not going to be the last time we'll be talking about this subject here on Wrestling Night in America. Just an inkling, just a feeling.
It's week one.
The phone call. I feel like it's been 3 months, John, that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Kylan, appreciate the call.
Thank you, Greg. You will be hearing from me again.
Awesome. Thank you, as always, Kylan. Let's go to the next call here, and then we'll take an email. This is let me get to it here. Move things around. Let's go to Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please start by complimenting my Jacksonville Jaguars on their amazing come-from-behind victory yesterday.
Yes, Greg, I will definitely have to do that. I was going to definitely bring, you know, I was very impressed because, like I said, especially, you know, I'm as big of a Trevor Lawrence fan as anybody is, and I knew when you guys got him, I was like, I think, you know, the future will be bright. And so to see him, you know, throw all the interceptions, you know, and a lot of them in the first half, you know, were definitely not good ones. And to see how he came back and just, you know, trusted the system, trusted his guys, you know, believed in what they were doing. And that's a huge win for your franchise, man. I think they, you know, are they going to win the title this year? No, of course not. I don't see them. If, you know, it works out, I'm assuming they'll play Kansas City, but you never know. I don't think they'll win that game. But just to see the confidence Trevor's building and everybody and just and Doug Peterson, I think, has done a good job with the team. So, no, that was a great win, man. That was a really good win. A lot of – see it coming. When it was 27-0, I'll admit, I thought it was long gone. I thought it was long over. But, no, I want to say, too, John, it's first time ever talking to you, man. I love what you do for .net. I've gotten to hear some of your NXT reviews, and I really appreciate what you do, man. It's good to talk to you. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. Good to talk to you, too.
Yeah, and I wanted to say I was messaging Frank all day too when the Giants game was going on because it was hard, of course, because they're playing the Vikings and, you know, Wade and Jason. I know that they're obviously huge Viking fans, but I am as much as I hated it for Wade and Jason, I was happy for Frank. We were texting. I'll say his message. I can hardly even speak. I can if I tried to call into Greg's show, I couldn't even do it tonight. I can't even talk. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, I was rooting for the Giants. I love what they've done. I love what Brian Daboll has done. It's been similar to Jacksonville, I think. You know, Daniel Jones up to this point has not really shown whether or not he can be the future with the Giants. And same with Trevor Lawrence last year. I mean, he was a wreck under Urban Meyer. So you get a real coach in there who is a real creative offensive mind, the way that Peterson has been and the way that Daboll has been, and all of a sudden the quarterbacks shine. And, you know, it's no coincidence that they're the two contenders to be coach of the year in the NFL this year, Doug Peterson and Brian Daboll. So, yeah, I like that the Giants won. I was happy to see that. Anyway, Sean, go ahead and hit us with what you got for wrestling tonight.
Absolutely. So the first one, I wanted to mix it up because John was on, and I know he obviously does the NXT reviews for .net. I wanted to bring up some NXT stuff because I know we don't get to talk about it here on Wrestling Night in America very often, so I wanted to kind of throw a little different plug in here. So I don't know. I wanted to kind of just talk about what you guys thought about the show because, John, I didn't hear your review on this last show yet for New Year's Evil, but I did not like the show at all, honestly. I thought it was really bad. I thought NXT's they've been doing some good things. I think it's been positive. I think there's some good characters are starting to build. But going, you know, especially with the Grayson, you know, with Braun, Shawn Michaels' thought was, well, you know, we want to get this for Vengeance Day. We want to get a big match on there. You know, let's go with this. But the way they got there was just horrible. I just hated it. So I don't know what you guys thought about that, you know, segment of that show in general. But then the show, maybe the whole show as a whole. And then do you guys like that? I think Grayson, I know, Greg, you've been a little down on him. I disagree in the sense of I really like Grayson Waller. I think he's a really good character. I think he's a really good wrestler. I think he's a great – I think he'll be a really good heel champion if they choose to go with him. So I want to see if you guys think that they will automatically at Vengeance Day go with Grayson as the champion and what you thought of NXT the last few weeks.
Yeah, I thought it was not a great offering this week. And I'll stipulate to the fact that I'm in the minority with Grayson Waller. I know a lot of people love him. I'm slowly warming up to him, I'll say that. You know, the count-out loss this week I thought was, you know, I think it fit. Ultimately, it was not satisfying as a viewer, but I think it fit Grayson Waller and who he is being portrayed as being. And I think, John, you know, when you look at the cast of characters and who the contenders are to eventually unseat Bron Breakker, whenever that might be, I think that Grayson Waller is probably at the top of the list.
He is, especially in terms of top heels in the company or in the developmental territory. But one thing, you know, so yeah, I do agree that the last show was very, like, all the matches were overbooked in a way. It had me thinking. I was like, Shawn Michaels bookings, it's borderline Jeff Jarrett TNA booking without the ref bumps and guitar shots. So, because, you know, I mean, it was like, you know, they did the whole, you know, the two buckles like falling off. The first match, it was Dijak versus Tony D'Angelo. They had Tony D'Angelo at the baby face take the bullets for his buddy Stax because of their family love that we that we all of a sudden have to accept. There were a couple of overbooked finishes if I remember what happened this past week. The reason why Zing seems so wonky though is I don't know why they had to build towards a special theme New Year's Evil show when they, you know, and they did this. So when they were booking towards New Year's Evil, they had to kickstart the booking to their actual PLE pay-per-view type of thing is because it was in a stadium that they have to fill. So it seems like they're looking ahead and that they're using this show as a launch pad, but it's like a road block that didn't have to be there. Maybe the network maybe USA told them they had to do this show. Back to top contenders. So Waller, like if he wins that title at Vengeance Day, here's the thing, like they do have to get the belt off of Breakker soon. He is starting to get very Monster of the Week type of deal with him. But, you know, I see, like, I can see Breakker going past Waller, that being fine too. I think the guy that Shawn Michaels is very high on and the guy that they eventually will build towards Breakker if they do pass by Waller is Carmelo Hayes at the Mania Weekend show. I'm planning to attend that one because it's going to be at Staples Center, and I still call that place Staples Center. I'm not going to call it the Crypto.com Arena. Hell no. But yes, it seems like they're very high on Carmelo Hayes, that he had a really good run as the North American champion, really like this whole Allen Iverson / I Am Him type character he's doing. Him and Trick are really good. I can see Carmelo being built as the heir apparent and being crowned in WrestleMania weekend in Los Angeles.
All right, Sean, back to you for your follow-up and your second question for us.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, John. I think, to me, I guess in my opinion, I'm kind of with a lot of people as far as I think Carmelo's done enough on NXT. I think he needs to move up. I just think he's kind of stale right now. I mean, not stale as far as, like, his character. His character's good. I just think there's not a lot of good stuff for him to do, a lot of people to work with, per se. And so I think just moving up, if they're, you know, high enough on him, which they should be, to bring him up, I think that'd be probably the best scenario. But if they're not, if they're going to, like you said, if they're going to keep it on Braun, then yeah, I would go with Carmelo to beat him for sure. My next thing was, this is more, to me it's more AEW, but at the same time, WWE does this a lot too. But I wanted to hear what you guys were thinking about. I do not like, especially in AEW, when they have these title matches, and especially with, like, Darby, you know, like Juice Robinson here, you know, calling out Darby and saying, I want a title match. Like, Juice Robinson, you know, as far as in AEW sense, has done nothing to earn a title shot. And I think AEW really needs to get away from that. I think they just want to have all these matches on the show and have all these title matches. But none of these people deserve a title shot at all. Like, they've done nothing to, you know, Jade Cargo, who I think has been totally ruined lately. Now, you know, you can say it's partly her, but I think the booking's just been really awful. You know, she's fighting all these people that had a streak that she had, and now it's just kind of gone totally under the radar. They don't do anything with her. She wrestles all these people that we know she's going to destroy. I don't know where they're going with that, too. But just in AEW in general and some with WWE, like, what do you guys think about all these title matches where the people really have done, you know, not a lot to earn these title shots? Am I, like, what do you think I'm way off base on that? What do you think about it?
No, I would like to see more non-title matches. You know, I think that is a good, you know, there was a time in WWE where you saw way too many champions lose in non-title matches, and it undercut their credibility as champions, and it was kind of a lazy way to set up a title match. But I would like to see non-title matches where the champion retains more often, or, you know, the champion wins, rather. Part of the problem, I think, in AEW is you just got so many championships. You got so many titles where you want to have one or two defended on every show, but then all of a sudden you don't have contenders for it, so you've got to put a Juice Robinson in there who maybe he hasn't done anything in AEW to deserve it, but, I mean, he's been a major player in New Japan. Maybe that's kind of the criteria they're using to give him a title shot if you want to really think about it that way. But, yeah, I think and AEW's ranking system was supposed to sort of solve this problem, and then they ditched the ranking system quietly a couple months ago, and then now we have all these people getting title shots who probably don't deserve it. I don't think that's a coincidence that those two things have happened simultaneously. John, what's your take on too many undeserving challengers to title matches? Is that a problem, you think? It may not even be, to be honest with you, it may not be even in the top 10 list of problems that AEW or WWE have, but I think it's worth bringing up as a conversation piece.
Totally. To their credit, they have done a little bit better job, you know, ever since the whole All Out situation. They've done a really good job at the top of their card, making their matches mean something. As you mentioned, there are too many titles. But this also goes back into the criticism Tony Khan gets for being more of a matchmaker as opposed to a booker. We see it a lot. You talked about Jade Cargill. They had the baddies break up. They just randomly put her against Kiera Hogan and have her dispatch when there could have been a story there. Kiera Hogan's really good. We saw it like recently. Like Brian Cage will come out of nowhere, challenge for a title for 2 weeks. Brian Cage, if you can build a several month storyline out of as an indestructible heel or babyface, and make him into something and put him over a hook or something. Look, they have an SEW title, the All Atlantic. There's a trios title that keeps tag team matches from happening. No, you're right, too many titles, but maybe part of this is they do need to take a step back. Tony needs to bring in other minds as to how to develop story. And this goes back to what I was talking about earlier with Frankie Kazarian and goes back into their death run. They do have a lot of problems and they all intertwine. So Frankie Kazarian in AEW, just going to have a bunch of random matches against a bunch of random people. Same thing with Juice Robinson, same thing with Bandito. I bring up Frankie Kazarian as like the control variable in an experiment because you take him into Impact, they really tell stories with him. They put him in a several month program. Doesn't have to be a main event program. It could be against undercard Honor No More. But yeah, what I mean is you put him in Impact. He's relevant now. This story, I actually care about characters. I think that, like I said, the problem in AEW, as you said, just having all these random matches with no build is, yes, you're having matchmaking, but who cares about the match? There's no character development. Who are these characters? People who saw those other companies know those characters, but even then, when they show up in a new place, they're just a blank slate. So,
Sean, you follow up on your final question for us tonight.
Yeah, I wanted to say the one other thing I thought of too, especially after watching AEW Wednesday was, with the Bryan Danielson and Takeshita match. It's like, I know why Bryan has to win, of course, because they're building the story with him and MJF. But I just think Takeshita is going to mean nothing after a while. Yeah, he's a really good wrestler. He puts on great matches, but he never wins. So how can you buy into somebody eventually that just never wins? And so I think they need to kind of do less of that and stop having such predictability in a lot of the matches. I think it gets a little too overdone. But the last thing I was going to bring up was people talked about it on the post-show Friday night with SmackDown with Gunther. I thought, you know, he gave Braun probably the best match he's had in a WWE ring. I think Gunther, they're just doing a great job with him. I didn't, you know, of course, Wade brought up and I was with him. I didn't think he should have been running from Braun initially. I thought that was kind of made him look a little weak. But overall, I think they've made him look very strong. I think his moveset's really good. He just his slaps just make you want to cringe. I never want to get hit by that guy. Please don't ever hit me. I'd go run with my tail between my legs. But what do you think the ceiling is ultimately? Do you think he'll eventually win, you know, the WWE title at some point? And what do you guys think when they were talking about, because I had thought about it in my head before somebody brought it up. I would, maybe it was, might even been Wade, I'm not sure, but I would love to see Gunther against Brock at WrestleMania. Like, I would love that. I know Brock has lost a little too much from my liking in the times he's been around, but since it's been a little while, and I think he could put Gunther over, obviously, in a big way because of the way he sells. I just think it would be a heck of a match between the two. So I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that. John, it's good talking to you, man. Greg, you're the best, man. Just appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate you calling in. I think the ceiling for Gunther, I think he could be a world champion. I really do. And I'm not sure I would have said that upon his debut, but just the way that he's booked and the confidence that creative and Triple H seem to have in him, there's a lot of upward mobility there, given how he's been portrayed right now. I think if you do Lesnar, like, I think probably Lesnar beats him. Like, I don't, you know, that's my take on it, and I don't think that's necessarily wrong either. I don't think a loss to Lesnar at WrestleMania will hurt Gunther. I think that could actually help him by, you know, I think they could make the match memorable enough with the moves that you may not remember the result, but you'll remember some of the action in it, you know, and I think that would be really good for Gunther to sort of get his feet wet in a major WrestleMania storyline. So I don't think you even need to have him win at WrestleMania against somebody like Lesnar. John, your take on the potential for Gunther. Is he, in your mind, a future world champion in WWE?
Oh, I totally think that and have thought that ever since he came into WWE. The only doubts, of course, being Vince McMahon probably not seeing it in him. But, hey, look, he's back, damn it. But, yes, I mean, totally the upside is there, you know, to be a world champion. Hey, I don't see them ever wanting to put the Intercontinental title on Brock. But if anything, if they continue to just have Gunther be synonymous with the Intercontinental title, that could be the way to get it off him at Mania. Because, as you mentioned, Brock is one of those guys that you can go to Gunther and say that there's no shame in losing to this guy. The other guy ending Gunther's this undefeated streak could be that plucky up-and-coming babyface, you know, your Ricochet types, your Ilya Dragunov types. But... No, I can see Gunther, as long as they're patient, because they can we talk about Vince being back, they can screw that up just like they did 6 seconds with Kofi Kingston. So there's always mm-hmm. and this is the whole thing. Move forward with everything. You just have to know that don't be surprised if Vince is like, I'm back. Okay. So yes. But, you know, Vince fears aside, just as long as they're consistent, as long as they don't, they don't screw it up, you can sky's the limit for Gunther. The guy has a great match with anyone, and it's that different type of great match with anyone. It's just two, like, dudes destroying each other. It's great.
Yeah, I'd agree. I don't think I would see Brock Lesnar winning the Intercontinental title. I'm not sure that Gunther is going to be Intercontinental champion at WrestleMania, so I guess I was kind of thinking in terms of that. Mm-hmm. The email question that we have is from our friend John, And it's been a while since we've heard from John, but he's very verbose. And this is a three-part question, so just bear with me as I read it. It's a bit long, and then we'll go back to our last call of the evening. John's email says, "Hi, Greg and co-host. Sorry, but another long one. I haven't emailed for a few months and a lot of interesting developments, especially with Sammy and the Bloodline. Just recently returned to watching WWE again at Survivor Series after not watching for a couple months because of the Saudi show being on the calendar, and quickly got back up to date with the non-Saudi show storylines in Survivor Series, and the main one, of course, is the Sami Zayn Bloodline story. A lot of people, based on WWE's long history of breaking up tag teams and factions, think that there will definitely be a turn, either the Bloodline turning on Sami or Sami turning on the Bloodline. That's what conventional wisdom says will happen. But I'm wondering if there is any scenario where neither happens. After the War Games match at Survivor Series and Zayn making his choice of loyalty to the Bloodline by helping them win and the Bloodline seeming genuine in their desire to welcome into the family, I think even WrestleMania seems too soon to tell a realistic story of the Bloodline quickly changing their minds again and dropping him. It seems Roman's playing games with him after presumably being the one to send the Usos and Solo Sikoa out there to get Zayn disqualified against Owens on SmackDown, as he otherwise was looking as if he may have been about to win, and Roman probably would have had no choice but to accept him as per the agreement. However, the body language of each Bloodline member and all their interactions with each other regarding Sami seem 100% genuine and definitely not like they're faking being on Sami's side and this is some elaborate ploy. Even the backstage segments of Jay talking to Jimmy and other Bloodline members with no Sami around sounds like it couldn't be an orchestrated ruse. They seem to have genuine affection towards Sami. Maybe Roman ordering them to drop Sami is enough of a reason and their loyalty to Roman is far away more important than their friendship with Sami. So in that sense, a turn could happen if Roman decides that's what must be done. That would just seem odd, though, because as I said, the interactions just seem mostly so genuine since Survivor Series specifically. I guess that's just great acting on everyone involved. The best way I can imagine a turn coming soonish in a relatively believable way, besides Roman just giving the order, is if it's Sami the one who turns on them. Like if Kevin Owens' words of warning over several weeks eventually makes Sami paranoid enough to make the call to turn on them before he believes they dropped them. His slip-up on SmackDown weeks ago of him and Owens possibly still being friends was probably no mistake. Owens has tried to convince him numerous times over recent weeks that the Bloodline are just using him. But I think that still probably has to take around 5 or 6 months at least to seem both believable enough of a development given how ingratiated he is with them as an honorary Oos, and also to make the most of the storyline, in my opinion, maybe around SummerSlam, where he could potentially face Roman Reigns after one turns on the other. So the question, can this story end with all Bloodline members, including Sami, remaining cohesive with no turns, and he becomes and remains more than just an honorary Oos in the end? So, John, I've seen more and more traction to the idea of Sami turning on the Bloodline rather than the other way around. I know Sean Ross Sapp tweeted that possibility, not reporting it, but just kind of like thinking out loud on it. Ryan Satin has, you know, agreed with that sentiment. I still think at this point people want to cheer. Well, I mean, you could do Sami turning and being a babyface. But I guess the question that John brings up is, can you really just keep them together and not have anyone turn?
Okay, no, totally. And that would be subverting expectations. And, you know, some people, you know, like, you know, some people don't, and what the emailer brought up is that we always see factions and we see groups break up, which is true. And, like, the only one, like, we really see these days is, like, the New Day being so tenured. But you only should subvert expectations. You only should do swerves when that swerve and or subverted expectation makes sense. There is seemingly more this, you know, more nuance, more storyline potential with the with Sami being at odds against Bloodline. And I'll like just to recommend to the emailer to like look at two different. On a like you know, facial expression, body language, on a smaller scale, look at Jimmy Uso, who seems to be over the top giddy. I can see that being as almost like condescending and just, you know, sort of like he's just a suck up and would turn on Sami on a dime when the flood tide turns the other way. But the bigger, you know, the thing that they really wanted to see, like just going back to the last SmackDown, was Sammy's reaction to the whole ending. Sammy was on a roll against Kevin Owens in the end. It was like seeing that old school Sammy Zayn that we saw in the indies, that we saw in NXT when he was treated as this serious wrestler. He was like really high on himself at that point, and the bloodline took it away from him, and Sammy looked disappointed. There was that seed of disappointment, which, you know, almost plants the visual that he is going to be at odds with, you know, the bloodline at some point. Roman is such a manipulative tactician that it's almost guaranteed that that's going to happen. Of course, yeah, no, there's seeming like that there's more money in this sort of, you know, if they continue, all, you know, this, everyone's all happy-go-lucky moving forward. What are you, you know, what more can you get out of the bloodline? They're just going to jump the shark if you just keep things as they are. Whereas if you shuffle things up even just a little bit, that you can get so much more compelling television and actually pay off a lot of the investment that they put into all these characters involved.
To John, in the next part of his question, he says, on to a related subject, all the logical possible contenders to face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. You can probably count all the believable threats to Reigns' title on one hand. Drew McIntyre at Clash of the Castle was, I think, the closest anyone has seemed to pin Roman and take one or both titles from him. But they, I think, curtailed Drew's momentum by having him lose and enter into a feud with Karrion Kross, which seems like it didn't really do anything for either of them. He also never really followed up with Sokoa, costing him the match, and it seemed quickly forgotten. He's now teaming with Sheamus and doesn't seem focused on the Undisputed title anymore. Let's look at all the logical challengers, and you can give your opinions. Cody Rhodes, he comes back and wins the Rumble and follows through on his bid to do what his father couldn't. The Rock, if the match happens, then this is probably the year, but does it have to be for the titles? Gunther, as acknowledged again on SmackDown this week, Gunther is on a hot streak and focused on the Royal Rumble match. Maybe champion versus champion to capitalize on his momentum. Seth Rollins, he has made his intentions clear to face Roman again because he believes he has his number, but has been distracted of late with the U.S. title. Kevin Owens, if the Sammy Bloodline feud goes beyond WrestleMania, then maybe Owens could finally get that rematch with Reigns at the event if they continue building him up. Drew McIntyre, maybe he builds momentum again and they maybe up the stakes to make it seem bigger than his time, like he puts his career on the line. And Sami Zayn, if they do break up before Mania, then this could be an epic conclusion or chapter of the Zayn bloodline story, with Zayn conquering Roman as a babyface. Question, if not Gunther, who would you pick for Mania, and would you book them to win? John, I think if there was ever a time for Roman Reigns to lose, it would be at WrestleMania this year on the biggest stage. The Rock, I think they would like to get him if they could. I think the backup is probably Cody Rhodes. Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns don't feel as much like WrestleMania matches as Cody Rhodes or The Rock would, even though it does seem like they're trending toward a Kevin Owens-Roman Reigns match. That may even be on the books already. I'll have to check that out. But, you know, I think Sami Zayn is an interesting one. I don't think 6 months ago you could have even thought Reigns versus Owens is at the Rumble, so I think we can kind of cross that out for WrestleMania. Zayn is an interesting one. The question is, do they get to that point by the time WrestleMania rolls around? So what's your take on potential opponents for Roman Reigns at WrestleMania?
Yeah, it's almost like it's a power ranking as to, like, these potential opponents. And I totally agree. Like, number one and number two on that power ranking is Rock Cody. And it's almost that point where I'm pretty sure Cody is going to be, like, sniffing around that WWE championship one way or another, just based off the recent, you know, just the recent videos of them chronicling his comeback. The best way you can pay off this comeback, which is huge, is, see, do they go back to have him go past Seth and then on his way to Roman, or do they just put him on his way to Roman? We'll see. There's the Royal Rumble, and of course, Cody can be a favorite. They're really pushing him hard without pushing the Rumble at all, which is interesting. But, yeah, no, I see Cody. Rock is a tricky one because that you need the guarantee that Rock is going to be there, and maybe they have that guarantee and are just keeping it a well-kept secret, which is good. That's what they want, and that's what we should want as a viewer, so that we can be surprised. So, yes, Rock, Cody, 1-2. Sammy is a dark horse. I can see. We talked about that in question one. There's the thing. Because if they don't get Rock, Sammy can be in case of emergency break glass type of situation. We're going to get Sammy Mania, and that's where they go. He goes after the Universal title, and that's what a match we get at Mania. And like I said, their AB is Rock Cody in case of emergency, break Sammy glass. Gunther, I wouldn't want to see because, you can get a lot out of Gunther. This with all the equity they built up in his Intercontinental title reign. And Drew is an interesting case in that when it seems like he's down and out, he's such a good baby face and the flag bearer of the company that he can bounce back. Tough to believe that now, but it was tough to believe that before Clash in the Castle, and they pulled it off. So, and I would see him, like I said, below Sammy in case of emergency deal, but I wouldn't count him out.
And the final part of John's question, he says, I personally don't get the fuss over The Rock facing Reigns for the title, to be honest. I mean, he is my favorite WWE superstar of all time, and I grew up watching him in the Attitude Era, and I used to have fun imitating his catchphrases with friends, but just coming in and immediately being a title challenger would make the outcome of the match obvious and would seem like a waste of a title match. He doesn't need the titles and should have no logical motivation to go after the titles other than he just wants them, which I don't think is a big enough reason to do Reigns Rock with all the family history and current bloodline storyline. Plus, WWE doesn't desperately need Rock for business as much as they used to when doing Cena Rock over 10 years ago. With the money coming in from TV deals and Peacock and international events and streaming becoming more and more important than cable, Rock will get fresh eyeballs on the product, no doubt, but it's questionable how many will stick around when he's gone, and will having Rock in a title match with Reigns offset any damage done by not propelling a full-time / younger guy to that role who could use the spotlight more or capitalizing on the Sammy bloodline in a title match? I get that having Rock is way better than not, and he's got tremendous name value, but my point is specifically having him face Reigns for the titles. If they can get one or both titles off Reigns by Mania, then I'd be all for a non-title match, but it's pretty safe to say that Reigns will still be champion when Mania rolls around. I get that Mania feels way bigger with legends and famous faces, and it's what separates it from any other pay-per-view / premium live event, but just have them face off in a non-title match where the focus is on their story and their relationship without the titles just hanging around as a bonus. Question. Would Sammy Roman or Gunther Roman be considered big enough for the WrestleMania main event, or does it have to be The Rock at all costs if you can get him involved, regardless of if he's in the greatest ring shape? On a very quick note, do you ever notice how Michael Cole always specifically refers to John Cena as the greatest of all time? Do you think that's Cole's personal views or he's told to say it? Hopefully someone like Austin Theory can benefit from printing the greatest of all time sometime, and a new star can be made. Keep up the great work. I think we forgot John Cena in that conversation for an opponent for Roman Reigns, especially since we did see on the last SmackDown of 2022 that John Cena was involved in a tag match on SmackDown against Roman Reigns. So I think you got to put his name in the hat as well for potential opponents for Reigns at WrestleMania. But John, in your opinion, Sammy Roman, Gunther Roman, would they be considered big enough for WrestleMania main events? I don't know about Gunther. I think you could get there with Sammy, given the storyline and given the popularity of the storyline and Sammy as well.
Oh yeah, no, and we talked about it in the last question. It's just there's many other things you can do at a main event level with Gunther as Intercontinental Champion to the point where you shouldn't really consolidate all of that into the world title program. Sammy, of course, like I said, if they don't have Rock, definitely. It's just because they built up so much storyline with Sammy involved with Roman. Talking about Rock, being a waste of a Mania spot. Let's say if they do the two Mania main events, Cody Rock, have Cody take the title off of Roman and have Rock not do it and do the job. is that at all wrong? Does Rock have to win? No. And that would elevate Roman, and someone else can go after the title down the road, not too far ahead. So yeah, that's more a better scenario. But going back to Cena, Cena can be one of those if emergency break glass, and Cena's a little bit this more reliable than Rock in that case, because I can see him coming back more on the regular than Rock, as term as, you know, just being the celebrity level and being able to take more bumps and and do a program. I can see, yes, Cena as one of those if in emergency break last type of guys.
All right, let's go to our final phone call for the evening. By the way, if you want to email us, always looking for emails each and every week, wnialivecast@gmail.com, can be about what we're talking about or just something completely different. You know, if you want to stick to our script, we'll be previewing the Royal Rumble next week. So I would love to hear from you, wnialivecast@gmail.com. But we go to DJ from Miami, who closes us out tonight. DJ, welcome to the show. What's your first question for us?
Yes, we can start with WWE because you guys are talking about it. Everybody knows that Vince is a troll. I mean, he tried to blow himself up in a, car. You know, it's crazy. So, and also he says that he never missed a WrestleMania ever once before. So, I figure that this is a stunt to, show eyes on WrestleMania is coming up, the draft is coming up, the Royal Rumble is coming up. You know, I feel like I don't think they're selling it anytime soon. I think that they just said something that, brought Vince back, you know what I mean? Like, everything, always eyes on Vince. So I feel like,
well,
I just hope he doesn't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but, I mean, this is a lot more at stake here for WWE and for Vince than just to say, oh, we want, let's have Vince do this big thing where he comes back and just to get more eyes on WrestleMania. I mean, there is legit financial and legal repercussions for what Vince did. I mean, it's not just, if you wanted to get eyes on the product, there are ways to do it without taking the tact Vince did. And so I think given his age and, the idea that it doesn't seem to be a big deal if WWE isn't in his family after he's gone, John, it does seem like Vince truly wants to cash out, and I don't see where this is anything but that.
Hey, if he wants to cash out, that's great. I would be happy if that happens. As long as he stays in his corner and not mess with the company, like I said, good, positive company morale, positive working environment, logical, creative, less trolley BS 24/7. Haha, exploding limo stuff. Like I said, as long as he stays in the corner and facilitates that sale, all will be forgiven in a way. Because again, he's just gonna, if he does otherwise, then he's just trying to sink the ship for his ego and pride. But like you said, there's just so much financial and legal stuff on the line. Hey, Vince, he doesn't. Nothing would surprise me. But you hope he would be at least a little bit logical on this one.
Well, can I add something, though? Well, let me say
this,
go ahead. Though. Okay, let me throw this in. Shane's kid did say they want to work with Grandpa. Now, Stephanie's daughter said she wants to wrestle. It sounds like, to me, they want to keep that business in the family. I have a feeling it's not going to the Saudis for sure. If anything, it'll go to NBC or something, but I don't think he's going to sell right away. I think maybe he might do something else. I don't know. Maybe half sale. I don't know. But I know that for some reason in his heart, I think he wants to keep it in his company. I mean, in the family. I don't know why. I mean, as you can tell, Linda hasn't said one thing about it either. Like, you haven't heard one peep from Linda at all. So,
well, Linda's not.
And,
I mean, Linda doesn't
you know how
really
she
have
is.
A role
She's always
anymore.
In the spotlight, ever since, she
Yeah, but she doesn't have a role in WWE anymore.
Yeah, stake. She still has stock in it.
Well, that's different than having a position with the company.
I know, but in general, people are going to ask her constantly if people are saying it all over the world. Like, is the WWE getting sold? So it's just somebody must have said something. I don't know. It's just kind of weird to me out of the blue, right before WrestleMania, all this stuff. You know what I mean? So, I don't know.
All right,
we'll see
yeah,
at the end of the day. It's kind of weird to
go
me
ahead
what's
with
going
your second
on.
Question.
My second thing is, I went back and saw the match of Kenny Omega and Japan. I don't know what Kenny is doing in EAW with his nonsense, but, dude, they beat the hell out of each other. Like, why can't he wrestle like that in EAW? He can have a great match. He, you know, lost money on the table with Punk or with all these other guys. He would be such a great wrestler if he wrestled like that strong style like he did in Japan. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the Kenny, the big match Kenny that we've gotten sometimes in AEW. We don't get it all the time. I mean, he can go to Japan and wrestle that kind of style every once in a while, but the toll that style takes on your body, it's not something you can wrestle every week or you know, even every other week on AEW TV or however often he wrestles. I think, you know, the fact that he's been involved in multiple four-star matches with the trios tag titles, it's tells you that he can still wrestle really good matches, even if it's not the hard-hitting style that he wrestled against Ospreay at New Japan. So, you know, I just don't think that style to do that consistently in the United States is sustainable for him at his age with the injuries he's had. John, is that more of a Kenny that you'd like to see in the United States, or are you fine with how he's been presented in the ring in AEW?
No, so for his, like, health's sake, he can't go out there and just wrestle a 25-minute match, like, every other week, every month. It's not sustainable, and like I said, for his health's sake, you don't want to see that for the guy. But I have brought it up early, and this is, like, a common opinion. Like, anytime you see this with Kenny Omega, too. And so you see Kenny Omega go to Mexico, AAA. You see Kenny Omega go to Impact. You see Kenny Omega go to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and he's a big star who has big matches and comes off as a big deal with character development. Whereas the Kenny Omega in AEW is somewhat quirky. His promos are kind of weird. He has good matches still. They're fine and like all over the place. But I can see what everyone else is saying is, for some reason, we don't get big star Kenny Omega in AEW. And this might be like similar to like Cody Rhodes in AEW, whereas like Cody Rhodes and Kenny Omega have a lot of creative freedom, like this in terms of how their booking is concerned. Maybe Cody, we see it with Cody where he's a very creative guy, but if you let him get too creative, he just goes all over the place. Kenny kind of too, mm-hmm. where if you have someone really in there working with Kenny and trying to do some character development, like so you're seeing it with Cody now, where you just rein him in, that, you know, it's how can we get to that big match, Kenny? And it was even a question brought up a while ago, because maybe it's not Kenny's fault, and maybe it's just the fault of there just not being so much character development in AEW to make Kenny Omega come off as a big star.
All right, DJ, your third and final question for us tonight.
Listen, though, I wish what he did in Japan, he'd throw that into some of the girls' stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he's running the girls' stuff and he did that great of a match in Japan, I think he can at least boost up the girls' division. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know about that one. My last thing is, I really hoped, I don't know. I feel like at the end of the day, Warlow is going to go back to MJF because he cut his hair. They didn't say why. They buried him. He has nowhere to go. I feel like I like MJF. He's like Roman Reigns. He's a great talker. He's a great wrestler. At the end of the day, Daniel Bryan's just a guy who wins or loses, you know. He's like Punk, a crowd, you know, bringer. You know what I'm saying? So I really hope that MJF, end of the day, stays champion and maybe Wardlow goes back. I don't know. What do you think at the end of the day with these two guys. I mean, do you think they're going to fight? Do you think he cut his hair? Why did he cut his hair? I don't get it. Nobody said anything yet. I'm confused.
I think we all agree that Wardlow is not in the position that we all anticipated him being in when he turned on MJF. Whether that fits your definition of being buried or whether you think that's enough of a reason for him to go back to MJF, I don't know. I don't think he should go back to MJF, but I do think that he has – I don't know about the cutting of the hair. I mean, you know, maybe that's just a new look. Maybe it's to kind of freshen things up because I think he does need a refresher of sorts, you know, because – he has been trapped in sort of purgatory for a little while in AEW, you know, feuding with Samoa Joe and all that kind of stuff, and it hasn't really gained a lot of traction. So anything to change your situation, I think, is probably going to be a positive. John, what do you think the future holds for Wardlow, and does it potentially hold the future of going back to, with MJF?
I agree with you in the sense that if they do bring him back with MJF, it will just come off as them eventually coming back to a lesser version of what they did so well the last time leading towards him leaving MJF. Yeah, to the point where it just won't be worth it. You're just going to run things back to run things back, and it's not going to pay off at nearly as well. I mean, I can see the reason why we want to see them run things back is they, you know, they totally screwed up the post, you know, the post build after the whole MJF storyline. He beats MJF. They have a world title tournament. He says, I don't want to go for the world title unless I face CM Punk. And then they have him feud with Mark Sterling and the security guards, and it was downhill from there. They, you know, the thing with Wardlow is, they have damaged him to an extent. They are all over the place with him, but all it really takes, like I said, going to back to MJF would just come off as a retread. Maybe they can find a creative way to do that, but I think the better solution is to settle down with Wardlow, have him stop talking about Wardlow's world or whatnot, and have him, you know, just build him in a steady storyline, maybe even separate from MJF, maybe eventually building up towards a showdown match down the road.
All right, DJ, appreciate the phone call this week. We'll talk to you again soon.
Talk to you soon. Thanks.
John, a lot of calls, man. A lot to talk about tonight. Really appreciate you coming on and helping me out with this. Before we let you go, I'll let you plug your social media and your work over there at .net.
Oh, totally. Yes, my name is John Moore. I write for ProWrestling.net. You can usually find me just reviewing Impact Wrestling and NXT. And my social media is at Little John M. That's at LiljohnM on Twitter.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks. Nice chatting with you.
All right, and we'll talk again next Sunday night, where we will preview the Royal Rumble. Always an exciting time, always an exciting event. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, and we'll talk to you next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.